John Molinaro has been there every step of the way. He is our senior soccer reporter on Sportsnet, and we're very pleased to be joined by him out of the gate. And I know that, you know, journalists, not supposed to be fans, but it's like anything else. When you cover a team for a long period of time and, you know, you have to go through the ups and downs, but some of the downs of this team were really, they were craters. What was your reaction last night when the match was over?
I was in a pretty reflective mood. You kind of hit it on it there. I mean, there's been so many ups and downs with this team. And as someone who's covered, you know, TFC since day one, there's been a lot of downs that I recalled. I mean, mm-hmm. This has been not to put too much of a fine point on it, but this has been a soul-sucking job at times covering this team. It really has. And many a times
you're
thought...
You're talking to somebody who covered the Montreal Expos.
There you go.
I've had my soul sucked several times.
Right. So, and more than once, you know, I thought about walking away just because it was just too much to bear.
Yeah.
So thought of all of that and just how far the franchise has come to, you know, it wasn't that long ago where Toronto FC was the laughingstock of Major League Soccer. Mm-hmm. Not that long ago at all. To now be at the point where, you know, they're one of the best, if not the best teams in this league and very much a model franchise. Just an amazing metamorphosis, an amazing transformation. I think that's what sort of hit home yesterday at the final whistle, just the transformation from what they once were to what they now are.
You know, I remember, it's interesting that you put it that way. We'll talk about the match and the 7-5 aggregate win for Toronto FC over the Montreal Impact. But I remember when Ryan Nelson was with the team, and I remember talking to him. I'd gone out to do a feature on him, the Globe and Mail, and I went out to talk to him. And he started talking about... all the stuff Toronto FC had. He talked about the money that had been put into things, into stuff, and he called it stuff. And he looked at me at one point and said, one of the problems here, and I don't think he was trying to throw anybody under the bus, but he said, one of the problems here is that there are so many resources that people just don't know how to use them properly.
Mm.
And, you know, I think, because, look, whatever people may think about MLSC, I don't think they did too much in the cheap, did they?
No.
They were guilty of anything, of spending too much money in the wrong places, putting too much trust in, well, the Guzman, for example. When did they start getting it right, John? Was it Tim Lewicki? Was that when they started trying to, and even though Jermaine Defoe didn't work out, was that a sign that there was some sort of logical something going into what the plans actually were, as opposed to just simply let's react to this and let's grab this and let's, you know, listen to this snake oil salesman.
Yeah, I think that very much was it. The appointment of Lewicki. Up until that point, Toronto FC, not that it was always in the shadow of the Raptors and the Maple Leafs in terms of the pecking order of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, and it still is. Mm-hmm. But I think Lewicki was the first sort of guy, executive at a very high level, who treated this team as an equal.
He was the champion for them, wasn't
Absolutely.
He? Absolutely. In the
boardroom. Huge advocate for the team. And so by going out and getting Michael Bradley and Jermaine Defoe that first year, that was a major sort of sign, signal of intent on his part. And yes, there's no question they botched the Defoe thing and they got that wrong and they didn't help matters with the whole, you know, bloody big deal campaign. But, you know, at least they went out and did something and there was you could see what they were doing. So there was that, but I think the more important sort of turning point was really how they responded to that. So they realized that it didn't work out. They cut their losses fairly quickly, went out and got Giovinco and brought in Altidor and brought in, you know, this offseason too, brought in guys like Drew Moore, brought in guys like Clint Irwin and Steven Betashore to shore up that defense.
Guys who knew the league.
Yeah, right. So character players, guys who are, you know, aren't designated players, but... No, you can't win just with designated players. You need a decent balance. So the last two seasons, the way that they've kind of rebuilt after, you know, botching the Defoe thing, that for me has been sort of the defining moment of this franchise. That is when they started to get it right and they started to turn things around.
And, of course, last night, the big goal, I think we can say Benoit Cheyrou, a guy who was brought here, was a starter at one point, on the bench. You know, it's funny, and I know you mentioned this a couple of times, and you've written this a couple of times, you know, and it really kind of sunk in last night. Here they're bringing in a guy who's played for Olympique Marseille. He's played big games in front of big, nasty, horrible crowds.
In Champions League.
Battles, in Champions League.
Yeah.
You know, Ricketts is a guy. He's played a ton everywhere in a lot of different places. They really, it seemed to me that this year, and I love Vanny's comment about they seem to have, sort of, they've been able to find the right guy at the right time on the bench to do what's needed. How much of that is on Tim Bezbachenko and Greg Vanny? Did they deserve maybe a little bit of credit here for kind of figuring out what they have?
Oh, I think they deserve a great deal of credit. You know, Tim, obviously, in being one of the architects of putting this team together, and I don't think Greg gets nearly enough credit as he deserves, because it's, you know, you can have all the resources, you can have all the players, but, you know, the coach at the end of the day still has to sort of find the right sort of combination. And he's gotten more out of this team than I think any coach had. You know, just the way he sort of managed the team through the injury crisis this season. I mean, at times they were missing four or five starters: Michael Bradley, Jozy Altidore, Sebastian Giovinco. These are key players, and they really sort of weathered the storm. But yeah, I think the way that they sort of identified what they needed, as we alluded to, these sort of MLS veteran players, these sort of role players that you need to round out a team with so many designated players. Full credit to them. And they went out, like, Drew Moore was a massive signing. This was like a free agent signing. Could have went anywhere. They had to shore up that defense. And this was a veteran defender who's won MLS Cup before. And he's been outstanding. I mean, he's been the, you know, the quarterback, as I say, of that defense all year. So I think they deserve full praise and full kudos for the way they've kind of identified the holes in this squad. And then gone out and kind of filled them capably and really built what I think is a solid and balanced roster.
Jozy Altidore was their best player through the playoffs.
What a beast.
Goes without saying. I mean, he, last night, just his physical presence, you know, he signaled his intentions early too. But he really is one of those guys, isn't he, John? It's just, and you see it in every sport, but you just kind of shake your head and go, God, if only the guy could stay 100% healthy 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just it with him, because he's a handful. He really is a handful.
He is. I think he was, man of the match yesterday. First player in MLS history to score in five consecutive playoff games. So what I like about him is just his attitude and his grit. And like you saw it yesterday, Montreal was fading in that extra time. Right? Mm-hmm. And God bless him. I thought they put up a valiant effort. And Toronto was to an extent too. And, you know, Giovinco had to come out with a cramping issue. But Altidore, it seemed like he could have played for another hour if he wanted to.
To get better as the match.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that deft little move that he kind of made down the right-hand side, skipping past his defender, and then played that great ball in for Ricketts, who fired at home. I mean, I can't say enough positive things about Jozy Altidore. I think more than Giovinco over the last sort of month or so, he's been Toronto's not just best player, but most influential and important player.
How big was that series, the aggregate we just saw for Canadian soccer?
Big, but I don't know that we'll fully understand the ramifications until several years from now.
Like, I think you probably made Toronto FC and MLS probably made some new fans.
Sure.
During the series. But I'm thinking in particular of will there be a trickle down in terms of, you know, Canadian players? I know there was an announcement yesterday about the Canadians and the import finally addressing that situation. But you know, I think we've been, you know, we've talked about this, right? So much of the conversation in Canada about soccer has to do with the women's team. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yep.
The men's team, the men's side of the sport has lagged a little bit. Yet there are so many people playing it. Could this series, Montreal against Toronto, these two games, could it have an impact, you think, in terms of soccer participation and maybe even just kind of helping the momentum of trying to get the politics and the logistics of soccer in Canada straightened out?
I think so, absolutely. And there's precedent for this, because I recall, if you remember the 2002 FIFA under 20 Women's World Cup that was held in Edmonton, and they drew great crowds of 40,000, 50,000 at Commonwealth Stadium. And that was really the tournament where, you know, players like Diana Matheson and Christine Sinclair and Carl Lang were really introduced to the world. And you talk to sort of current members of the Canadian women's team who won, you know, Olympic bronze this summer in Rio, and they'll tell you that they were young girls watching that tournament, and that's what inspired them to take up the sport. You talk to a guy like Jason DeVos, who, you know, as a kid played soccer, but he didn't really want to become a pro soccer player until he saw, you know, Canada play it at the 1986 World Cup. That's what sort of led him to choose this as a profession. So, yeah, I think there is the potential there for, you know, young sort of boys who was watching these two-game series and watch guys like Jonathan Osorio and Will Johnson and Tosin Ricketts, Canadian players who were having an impact in this two-game series. Hopefully that can inspire them, and it will lead to the sort of more participation in the sport going forward.
All right, let's move on and talk about the Seattle Sounders. We had a little conversation in the office before we came in the air. Last place at one point.
Yeah.
Obviously, they've clearly turned it around. I would think Toronto FC will go into this as the favorites.
Yeah, I think so.
How different, or in what ways are the Seattle Sounders different from the Montreal Impact?
Well, I mean, I think Seattle more balanced. You know, I think better defensive team. They certainly don't play that sort of counter-attacking style that Montreal plays. But certainly I think they have a little bit more attacking flair with guys like the young American forward Jordan Morris and Nicolas Lodero, the Uruguayan playmaker that they picked up mid-season. He's been a sensational addition for them, and I think he's really sort of inspired them. You know, Seattle was, you know, at one point they were last place in the Western Conference in late July, and then during the second half of the year they've only lost two games. So, and Lodero's played a big role in that. So they've got some attacking sort of players there. I think on paper, Toronto is a better team. But, you know, it's going to be a tightly contested game, I think.
Any concerns at all about Javenko's health? He certainly didn't look like it after the game, the way he was running around.
Yeah. No, I mean, we asked Greg Vanney that in the post-match press conference. It was just cramping. He just said he couldn't go anymore. So, I mean, you know, fair play to him. You know, he could have easily played on and said, no, I want to be here. But, you know, to say, no, you know what, I can't go on. You got to get someone in on there for me. I thought that was a good sign. So I fully expect him to be fully fit for December 10th.
But that also gets back to the depth, doesn't it? The fact that a guy who is the best player in MLS, I think we could say.
Sure.
In a game of that stature, has enough confidence. He realizes he can't go on, but he's not going to stay out there and hobble around. He's got enough confidence in the guy coming in to replace him that he's, you know, he's okay making that decision.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it just, I mean, my mindset too, when I saw like that substitution come in, it was like, yeah, okay, we got this. No big deal. I mean, Javenko coming out, you would think to a normal person, wow, this is going to really devastate Toronto FC. But I didn't think they lost anything. You know, they were still clearly the better side at that point. And if anyone was going to score, you had the feeling that it was going to be Toronto.
Michael Bradley has, since he's come here, he's kind of been, Javenko's the star, but Bradley's kind of been, it seems at times as if he's kind of the go-to guy in a lot of ways. He can be a little aloof at times. Not the greatest quote in the world. We did an interview with him on here where I thought he was really good. And I just find him to be kind of a fascinating character. I don't know if we have had an athlete in the city that people have had a more difficult time figuring out.
I think that's quite right. He is out of all the athletes I've ever covered, he is easily the most intense, the most sort of concentrated, the most, I mean, this guy is all soccer all the time. I mean, obviously not at home with his wife and kids, but the guy's concentration level and commitment and just focus is on soccer. It's unbelievable. And you're quite right. He can be very aloof. He can be very standoffish with the media at times, myself in particular. But he's also a very thoughtful guy. Mm-hmm. He's not someone who kind of gives cliched answers, and he really sort of thinks about what he wants to say before he just sort of blurts anything out. So I have a great deal of respect for him, and if for no other reason that he lays the truth bare most of the times. He's not, you know, he doesn't sort of sugarcoat stuff. He will sort of speak truth to power. So I have a great deal of respect for him for that.
For people who don't follow the team that closely, this team that could win the MLS Cup, do we expect them to be back, largely back next year as well? Is the core there going to be back?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think for the most part, yes. Will Johnson is an interesting one because he's out of contract at the end of the year, and he's an unrestricted free agent.
And he started last night, correct?
He did start last night, yeah. So he can, you know, I don't doubt that they would like to keep him, but he does have other options out there. He would certainly have a lot of suitors, and we have to remember this is a salary cap league. So, you know, they have to preserve some space for moves that they want to go forward, and I'm not sure that Toronto would necessarily want to give him a substantial raise.
Right.
He's a great player, and I think they should, you know, move heaven and earth to retain him, but there's certain fiscal, you know, realities here at play.
Now, and explain to me as well the announcement that was made by the Canadian Soccer Association yesterday and MLS in regards to the, you know, the import player status.
Right. So Canadians. So it's a bit complicated, but in a nutshell, so right now, Canadian U.S. players who play on Canadian teams are considered domestic players, and MLS rosters are only allowed a certain amount of international slots. Mm-hmm. So Americans who play on Canadian teams are considered domestic players, not internationals. But Canadian players who play on U.S. teams are considered internationals. And so what happens is that a lot of times U.S. clubs are a little leery to take on Canadian players because they're burning one of their very few international slots. So there's this inequity here, and it's long been a point of contention for people here in Canada. The announcement yesterday is that homegrown players, in terms of young players that MLS teams sort of develop, Canadians, regardless whether they play for U.S. or Canadian clubs, are going to be considered domestic players straight across the board. It's a good move. It's a good first step, but it doesn't address sort of like the bigger issue about, you know, what about the rest of the field of, you know, Canadian players who have played in this league for a long time. And Don Garber and the league will say it's a labor issue, it's a legal issue. But I think that's a load of nonsense. I really do. And it's something, I mean, they've dragged their feet on this. It's really something that they could have figured out a long time ago. I just don't necessarily think it's that much of a priority for them.
John, it was great to join us today. Thanks so much. It was a lot of fun last night. And there are people out there who are actually going to live to see a Toronto team win a championship.
Good to see. Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe, hopefully. Fingers crossed.